The following is an interview with Vernon C. Loewen, L-O-E-N, Special Assistant to the President for Congressional Relations. The interview was conducted by Susan Yowell on November 5, 1974, in Mr. Loewen's office in the East Wing of the White House. I'll ask you first, when did you first come to the staff?
I believe it was August 27th, 1973.
Okay. And do you know how you were recruited or how you
I was recruited by Mr. Friedersdorf and Mr. Timmons.
Had you been working on the Hill?
I had known both of them for a number of years, particularly Mr. Friedersdorf. And I was an administrative assistant on the Hill, and so was he. So we'd come to know each other and played golf with each other and so forth. And we'd not had that many business dealings, but when he came down to the White House, I was then with Congressman Quie, who was ranking on the Education and Labor Committee, and one of the most key figures from the standpoint of the volume of legislation that comes out of his committee. And of course, he was expected to carry the ball for the administration. And so Mr. Friedersdorf and I had many dealings when he was in congressional liaison here at the White House, and I was an administrative assistant. So when they had a vacancy, my name popped into his mind, and he called me and accepted him after an interview with Mr. Timmons.
Do you know if your appointment to the staff ever went through the White House personnel recruiting staff?
I don't believe it did, because Mr. Timmons has had carte blanche for his own staff.
Do you also know if you were recruited to fill any particular area on the congressional liaison staff in terms of constituency? Mr. Ainsworth, I think, was appointed because of the need for a better relationship with the Southern.
Yes, obviously we're a minority party, and if we're to have any legislative victories, we have to have Democrats to vote with us, and the most likely target area is in the South. So Mr. Ainsworth filled that need. I was recruited and partly for geographical balance, partly because of my association with Quie, and I think also partly because in the aftermath of Watergate, they were extremely sensitive about their personnel selections, naturally. And Mr. Quie is known as one of the most ethical men on the Hill, a very deeply religious man. And because of my association with him, I think that contributed to my selection.
Mm-hmm. What about, were you recruited to fill any subject areas that stood
out
in particular?
Yes, another reason is that some of the most troublesome legislation that we get from the standpoint of possible vetoes is and a difficulty in mending it successfully comes from the Education and Labor Committee, which I had great familiarity, and therefore was assigned I think I have been assigned to every bill that's come out of that committee in a little over a year that I've been here.
Could you give a general description of what your role was in promoting the president's legislative program?
Well, I there's really no definite breakdown. My number one beat, so to speak, is the Rules Committee. The Rules Committee, of course, is the traffic cop of all legislation, and they determine how long the debate shall be and under what conditions each bill should be debated. And you get in capsule form there by attending those hearings. They ask for a rule. You get a very capsulized version of the legislation, and you immediately are able to spot the trouble spots and need amendments, for example. Or you get early warning of a possible veto. And then we, in turn, then can react and suggest amendments and put those in the hands of appropriate sponsors. If it's an education labor bill, for example, Mr. Quee would be up there testifying along with Chairman Perkins. And so I cover those hearings virtually every day they meet. In the afternoons, I monitor the floor debate. And after having very often asked members to offer amendments to clean up the legislation from the administration's point of view. As for subject matter, it's sort of a hit and miss. Whoever has some background or expertise in a particular area, well, he kind of inherits that. Mr. Friedersdorf has sort of floats between Mr. Ainsworth and me, and I generally work with the northern and the western, midwestern Republicans, while Ainsworth is working with the southern Democrats, and we're attempting to put together coalitions that will support our point of view, whether it be by amendment or defeat or passage of a bill.
Did you work more often with the leadership or with the...
Well, another major role, my one that occupied a great deal of my time, or did in the Nixon administration, has continued to in this administration, is personnel matters. I screen all congressional, all House members' correspondence recommending qualified individuals for presidential appointments. I just sort of monitor those and try to give guidance to the personnel office as to whether a member is really serious in, or whether he's just doing it pro forma. And after years on the Hill, I can pretty well spot the way the letter is written, you know, whether the guy is serious about his candidate or not. And so I give informal guidance to the personnel office, and then when they come back, when they make their selections over there, they come back to the president, to General Haig, handle most of this. I don't think President Nixon in the final months focused too much on personnel appointments. But General Haig would get a memo from the personnel office, and he would sign off on this particular nominee or group of nominees, and then the memo would come to me through Timmons and Friedersdorf, and I would make notes from it and prepare a form that would submit to Minority Leader Rhodes. And of course, when I started, it was Minority Leader Ford. So I first really came to know the president and get his concurrence on these appointments. It's a matter of courtesy. We do it, the Senate has a similar operation. Mr. O'Donnell handled that over there. And Fred Weber before him in the Nixon administration. And he would get Senator Scott's concurrence in any administration. We call it a preliminary clearance. And then, of course, they had to go through FBI and political checks and so forth before it was finally finalized and announced by the press office. And then at that time, too, when it's ready for announcement, then we call the appropriate congressional offices that had expressed interest, going way back to whoever had originally nominated the guy, you know, right, or the woman.
Right. Everyone has to add that today. I know that the congressional liaison staff attended regular morning staff meetings. I guess there were a series of three meetings.
7:30 every morning.
Did the 7:30 meeting with the OMB and the Domestic Council, and then 8 o'clock was with
right.
Timmons and...
Timmons is just his staff. That would be in the Nixon administration. It was Korologos and Weber for the Senate, and Friedersdorf, Ainsworth, and me for the House, and then Timmons' administrative assistant, who was Pat O'Donnell during most of the Nixon administration. Mm-hmm. And then he succeeded Fred Weber as Senate liaison after, and Powell Moore took his place as Timmons' executive assistant.
Did you have any particular role in those meetings, or were there any
yes.
distinguishable roles?
What they due at the 7:30 meeting with the domestic council and OMB is that Ken Cole would chair the meeting, and then after Friedersdorf and Corlogus would give the daily report of what happened in the House and Senate yesterday and what we expect today and for the balance of the week, then we'd go around the table. And my role would be to report on those high priority administration bills with which we were experiencing our most trouble. In most cases, we focus on the ones that are the most troublesome. And we report on where they stood and what the outlook was and what we are doing to try to clean them up.
It would probably be based on the particular legislation that you were working on at the time, but were there particular offices within the White House that you coordinated frequently, with frequently on substantive matters?
Oh, yes. The policy calls are made in OMB and in the Domestic Council. And I don't know if you're familiar with their breakdown over there, but we would look to them for the policy guidance. Once we had the policy guidance, then we would decide, Mr. Friedersdorf and Mr. Timmons primarily, and Mr. Corlogus would decide what is politically achievable. And then we would be the technicians on the Hill to attempt to amend or defeat or stop at the Rules Committee, or if it was bogged down, a bill we wanted to get it moving, you see. And just by our knowledge of legislative strategy and tactics, relationships with members up there, go to them and ask them to do these favors for us to carry out the President's program, whether it's in favor of a bill or against a bill.
Were there particular contacts that you had on a continuing basis with individuals in the Domestic Council and OMB?
It would vary from day to day depending on the legislation. I dealt with all of them that sat in these meetings at one time or another.
What about your contact with people in the departments and agencies?
Quite limited. We would deal mainly through congressional liaison. When it came to dealing like with the secretaries, their agency heads, we would normally go to the Domestic Council and relay our problem to the appropriate one having jurisdiction over this department or agency. He in turn then would call the official if that was necessary. But my personal contacts have been pretty much limited to congressional liaison to ask them to check on a certain project for a member that had contacted me or something like that. Rather limited when it comes to agency contacts. Practically all of our, about 50% of our time and all of our attention is devoted to the Hill, and we're physically up there about half of the day.
I think you started to touch on this when you said that you would indicate to the substantive people in the Domestic Council or OMB what was politically feasible.
Right.
But is there any way that you could evaluate the input on policy formulation? There was any way of evaluating the role of this office and if there were any particular areas that you had a substantive input into the policy formulation?
Legislative policy formulation, yes. mainly from the standpoint of what it was politically achievable. For example, there are people down here on the Domestic Council or in OMB who see 300 members introduce a tax bill, but they have no realization that if Wilbur Mills, chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, which will consider that bill, is dead set opposed to that proposal, even though the administration may want it, it isn't going to go anywhere. And we have to impress upon them that type of political intelligence, because they just don't have the background to understand that. That's why we have the intermingling of the policymakers with the legislative technicians.
Right.
That's probably the main impact, and then to figure out, in consultation with my superiors, which amendments are worth fighting for, and or should we attempt to amend a bill at all? Because it's, say it's called the Safe Drinking Water Act, for example. We know anything that reaches the House floor with a title like that is going to be voted through overwhelmingly. So Do we attempt to amend it if it had the objectionable features in it, or do we attempt to kill it in the Rules Committee, or do we attempt to just let it die in the Senate after having passed the House overwhelmingly? You see, and that's the type of daily judgments, mainly strategy judgments, that each of us make, and we sort of made those in the next administration in consultation with our superiors and with the policymakers in OMB and the Domestic Council. And that has pretty much continued in the same format in this administration.
Could you describe how closely you did work with Mr. Friedersdorf and Mr. Timmons, and how closely you coordinated with the other people in the congressional?
Well, I worked most closely with Mr. Friedersdorf and Mr. Ainsworth, of course. I would see Mr. Timmons every morning at 8 o'clock, and if it was urgent, he's a terribly busy man, so I would, Mr. Friedersdorf would have the main contacts with him. We would feed our input mainly through Mr. Friedersdorf if he were not available, and we'd call Mr. Timmons directly. Occasionally, say if we went over to the mess at lunch, we'd drop in, and if he wasn't on the phone, which he usually was, we would visit with him about political problems or legislative problems and whatever, just on an ad hoc basis. But primarily our contacts were with and through Mr. Friedersdorf.
And what about your relationship with the people working on the Senate side, Mr. Korologos?
Well, we'd see them every morning, and we'd see them every night, and that's mm-hmm. about the extent of it. Mm-hmm. You know, we were out of the office practically all day, you know.
Did you find that you were that you would coordinate very closely with the Senate side and vice versa in terms of strategy while the bill was still in the other side of the House?
Well, particularly in the cases of veto, we would compare notes and decide whether we had a better chance to sustain a veto in the House or in the Senate. Of course, much depended upon which House got the first crack at it. And Mr. Friedersdorf, Mr. Korologos, who were very experienced vote counters, and then Mr. Ainsworth and I would pick up the phone and call target lists of congressmen that we hoped support the president's position on a particular veto. Fortunately, there were not too many vetoes.
You touched on this before I turned on the tape recorder, but what form of documentation does exist on your activity?
Just routine acknowledgments, mainly, because practically everything is done on the phone or in person up on the Hill.
Did you keep any memoranda, either formal memoranda for a file or any notes on your contacts with members of Congress or
I have a little stack of thank you notes, is all, just for my old age to go through and reminisce. Mm-hmm.
But you don't have any formal memoranda of conversation?
No.
Or
no.
Notes on?
None whatsoever.
The results of your daily contact? Or
no.
Whether or not you thought your argument was convincing? Or
none.
Okay. And I understand there were no formal minutes of these morning meetings?
No.
Would there be staff offices in some of these areas that you worked with in Domestic Council or OMB that would have any substantial documentation from you? Did you correspond with them by way of memo at all?
Yes, frequently.
And did you?
Frequently. That's one area. Most of our memos would go to Timmons, and Timmons would decide what follow-up action was appropriate, and he would refer it to the appropriate person. But occasionally, we would send memos directly to someone in OMB or in the National Security Council sometimes, on rare occasions, or in the Domestic Council, primarily OMB and the Domestic Council, the policymakers, and let them know the status of legislative proposals, and particularly the troublesome features of them and what we are doing to try to counteract those features. And that those memos, of course, would go through Mr. Friedersdorf and Mr. Timmons to the subject person.
You also mentioned that, I think you did, was it you that mentioned you did draft a lot of material that went out under Mr. Friedersdorf's name?
No.
I guess I'm interpreting that the wrong way. You said that everything did go out under his name, so.
Practically everything. Right. When I get a personal letter, like from my old boss, Al Cui, I send him back an acknowledgement under my signature. Mm-hmm. But most of our contacts are by phone. The routine personnel things were mainly what they would write about. Members of Congress, and they would usually be addressed to Mr. Friedersdorf, so he would acknowledge them. I would acknowledge them if they were addressed to me.
Did you ever do any public speaking on behalf of the administration?
Yes, last spring during our annual influx of visitors, I sort of was appointed the White House ambassador of goodwill, shall we say. And when some members of Congress have a policy of inviting certain groups down each year for either on internships or as a just as an educational experience to tour Washington. And of course, one of the high points of their visit is the White House. And when a member of Congress sends a delegation of his constituents down here, then someone is usually requested to greet them and tell them a little bit about the White House. And that became my function last spring. Frequently, too, congressmen have interns. They mean high school students, usually high school seniors, usually. They have 2 to 4 in their offices, and they would send them down here and ask one of us to talk to them and tell them about the operation of the White House, and particularly our office, and our relationship to the president, for example. And I usually drew that chore, so, which I enjoyed.
I know you logged many miles traveling back and forth between here and the Hill, but in addition to that, did you do any traveling in relation to your work?
Not with President Nixon, none whatsoever.
Okay. Were there, one thing that we're tried to ask people is whether or not there have been any published articles which described the activity of your office, which might be particularly noteworthy for.
Yes, Congressional Quarterly had an excellent article about, I think it was last winter, early spring.
Okay, I am familiar with that. That was a very good article. As a matter of fact, I think everyone has mentioned it. Also, do you have any particular areas that you feel are not well documented in the files, and obviously because most of your work was done on a personal basis, it's not well documented?
I purposely never saved anything dealing with sensitive political matters.
Well, are there any areas that you can just name in general that should be talked about in more depth if the archives does have more in-depth oral history project covering the administration years?
Well, I suspect there will be many books written on our role in the impeachment matter. That, of course, most intriguing and to us the most traumatic experience of, I think, for any of us here during that era. What went on during those weeks and months has not yet come to light from the standpoint of what we were doing on the Hill, legislative strategy, and so forth. I suspect that, as I say, there will be books written on that subject.
I'm sure there will be a lot of interest in that for many years to come. One thing I didn't ask you, were there any special task forces, or whether they were formal or informal, or other special projects that you worked on while you were here, which may not have been even directly related with congressional liaison?
Oh, we get innumerable requests for odd requests from congressmen on behalf of their constituents. For example, I had one where a congressman asked that a constituent who had been convicted of income tax evasion and had paid his fine and everything, but was placed on probation. And was still under probation, wanted to go on a hunting trip. Well, he discovered that the terms of his probation forbade him from carrying a firearm. And this congressman asked us to go to the Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms, or whatever it's called, in the Treasury Department, and see if we could get them to make an exception so this man could go on a hunting trip. You know, that type of oddball requests. We get a zillion of those. And constantly bombarded by job seekers, all the time.
But most of these were done as in terms of constituent requests.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And you name any type of a situation, and we've had a request that'll just incredible, the things that they will come up with.
Is there any way of making any kind of an evaluation of the the amount of time which is spent by the congressional liaison staff in terms of requests from the legislators or their constituents versus the actual performance of your designated duty of trying to establish a liaison and promote the president's programs on the Hill?
I would say it's about 50-50. That's one of our great problems, and one of the reasons we work such long hours is that these personal requests, all different types, keep getting in the way of our carrying out our primary function, which is the advancement of the president's program.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I guess it's so interrelated.
But on the other hand, if you are going to ask a congressman to help the president in support of a legislative objective, you can't very well turn down a congressman on something that may be trivial, but it's important to him, and because it's important to his constituent. So we spend a great many hours every day. That's why I kept you waiting here. I was working on that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. For the record, who was your secretary for the time you were here? The person who would be most familiar with your files?
Jana Martin. Mrs. Toni Martin lives in Alexandria, Virginia. She left in around the 1st of June this year because of pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. How long
since then,
Nancy?
Mrs. Brazelton has been my secretary.
Okay.
But Mrs. Martin was my secretary throughout the entire time until she left.
And also, for the record, are you planning to continue with the Ford administration?
Hope to.
Obviously, you're here now, and I know he has asked the entire congressional liaison staff to remain.
Right, but many of them will not. They will be leaving. It will be announced very shortly.
As you mentioned, it certainly is a unique relationship that many of the people on this staff have with the now president, who was then
I'll give you a rather humorous example of that relationship. My boss, Max Petersdorf, and Ainsworth and I went up to the Hill the first night President Ford addressed the joint session of Congress after he became president. And as he came out of a little ante room afterwards, we were standing in the hall waiting for him, and impulsively, Mr. Petersdorf reached out and shook his hand and says, "Great speech, Jerry."
I think that's great. Well, that's about all the areas that we have. As I said, we're just trying to get a basic statement. And thank you for your time. I appreciate it.